This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05. You are with Kelvin and Ayman on the evening edition. And for our next story, we're talking about how to achieve a more balanced development between states in Malaysia. So this comes after the Kedah Chief Minister, Datuk Seri Mukris Mahathir, explained the reasons why Kedah remains a poor state.
So according to Mukris, Kedah's ability to increase state revenue has been limited by their commitment to food security because they cannot exploit forests since their paddy cultivation industry needs large water catchment areas, and because of that they've been focusing on other strategies apart from deforestation, for example like promoting tourism and developing the Kulim High-Tech Industrial Park.
And this idea of equal development also relates to a call by the Kelantan DAP chairperson Dato' Zaid Ibrahim, who urged the federal government to do more to help opposition states. To this, the finance minister Lim Guan Eng pointed out that the Pakatan government channeled more funds than the previous government, with 13.05 billion given last year to the six least developed states in Malaysia, including Perlis, Kedah and Kelantan. So I think this has been, you know, a conversation that we've been having forever. You know, we know for a fact that development has always been more or less centered in urban areas and more so especially in Semenanjung. And there's always been conversations about the urban-rural gap that continues to exist. And I think moving forward, there's always, you know, hopefully plans to try and address that as properly as we can. Because, you know, for one, if we don't address that, there will be continuous problems with equal growth and income equality. And there's also a lot of grievances and history that we have to address and acknowledge if we want to do better.
Yeah, I think, because I read a study like a couple of years ago that suggested that the unequal development across states in Malaysia can be attributed to our historical roots, right? Back during the colonial era, where, you know, back then the British divided us into the Negeri Tidak Bersekutu and Negeri Melayu Bersekutu.
Yeah.
And what ended up was that, you know, a lot of economic activity and infrastructure was focused on the west coast of Malaysia, whereas the east coast and of Malaysia, you know, lagged behind. And I think we see that even nowadays, right? Kelantan, for example, and Terengganu and Perlis and Kedah being one of the more poorer states in Malaysia compared to states like Selangor and Perak. And I think what that suggests is that there is a sense of perpetuation.
Yep.
So you start in a position where perhaps you lack the human capital, you lack the infrastructure, and that has long-lasting effects across decades and generations, which leads up to today. So I guess in terms of bringing about development, right, it depends really what you see as development or how you define development.
Right.
Is it a matter of increasing income? Is it a matter of perhaps living a more modern life? Or is it about, you know, having skyscrapers and huge cities? And that will, you know, determine your approach to development. But I think people in general see it as an increasing income. That is what matters most to people, being able to put food on the table and having a better quality of life. Therefore, you know, approaches to development across Malaysia would be, you know, very much related to increasing everyone's income.
And I think one additional issue to that is also the fact that we have a very top-heavy management when it comes to funds, when it comes to allocations for development and all that. Because a lot of it, you know, we know there are some distinctions between federal and state, you know, the powers and the ability to generate sort of their own income and all that. But because right now there isn't any sort of active competition among the states to perhaps innovate, to fight against each other, essentially, for, you know, to bring in talents, to bring in infrastructure development, to bring in all sorts of projects. I think that's led to a position where states are currently not really doing something where there is a lot of policy innovation to help them to, you know, be the edge, right? To have an edge over the other states, to say, hey, this is what I'm great at, this is what I can provide for you in terms of business development, this is what I can give you in terms of talent, so you can come and bring in your business and we will help you grow. And what happens there is also, because of that lack of development, we also see a lot of instances of urban migration and people are moving from states that are perhaps less developed into cities. And, you know, we also, again, have this other issue where, like, cities are the places where there's a lot of funds, where things are still being developed, and our focus is still very much in cities, and we want to build more cities, given the fact that it seems like that's the current plan that we have.
Yeah, and that severely affects the ability of these states to compete, right? Like we were saying earlier, how much can they compete with the states surrounding them? And that really depends on the kind of cards that each state has been dealt with.
Yeah.
Each state has their own unique problems, depending on what natural resources they have or what human resources they have, and you know, and how much capital can they sort of inject to promote entrepreneurship, for example, which can lead to job creations and increase in income. So each state really has their own challenges. And so when talking about bringing development across states in Malaysia, it's not a matter of like a one-size-fits-all kind of policy. It's not just a matter of like, we build a railway through your state, it will bring businesses to you. No, that's not the only solution, because it's a multi-pronged kind of problem that needs to be looked at from a more flexible kind of perspective.
So we're now going to head to Dr. Madeline Burma, fellow at Academy Sciences of Malaysia. Dr. Madeline, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me to share my thoughts.
So how would you describe the state of development across the different states in Malaysia?
Okay, I think this is an ongoing issue that has been discussed all the while. We have an what we call inequality in terms of development, and inequality comes in different dimensions. First is what we call in terms of strata, in terms of rural and urban. Then the other one is in terms of, sometimes they call it wilayah or region. And then we even have, like when I say region, it could be north, south, east, west. And then the other one is Peninsula Malaysia and Sabah and Sarawak. So these are the kind of inequality that has been prevalent in our country. And I think it has been going on for some times, and other efforts have been made, but I think the situation is still the same. And in some instances, I think with the differences in terms of political affiliation or political, in terms of some states are the existing government and the other one is against the, in terms of being opposition. So the situation is getting, I mean, if we don't address it well, it will eventually lead to a situation we have a dichotomy in terms of development. Yeah, that's for a start.
And are the challenges that face each state very specific? Could you give us some examples of it?
Of course, definitely. You got some are structural issues, and when I say structural issues, I can cite my own state, my favorite state, the state of Sarawak. I'm from Sarawak. Now everybody knows that the size, you know, the size of the state is really like it's the biggest state in Malaysia. In fact, it's bigger than Peninsula Malaysia.
Yeah.
So one, of course, we only cite that as an excuse, or rather as a reason why the state is a bit lacking in terms of infrastructure development. I'm not talking about other forms of development. There are some areas where I think Sarawak is far ahead in terms of, well, if you look at in terms of unity, we are very much far ahead compared to some other states here in Peninsula. But of course, when you talk about development, there's always, you rightly mentioned, is going beyond just income or rather GDP, but we're also talking about sustainability, we're also talking about, you know, accessibility to basic infrastructure. So Sarawak, one of the biggest challenges is that one, is that it's one of the largest states, but it is also one of the richest states in the country. So although that issue, a lot of people have been using a political argument saying that then the people should not be that poor, you know, because it has one of the highest incidence of poverty in the country. So coming back to the issue, when you ask me, one is in terms of the size. And secondly, from the political economy kind of argument, there has been strong argument saying that there is some kind of discrimination. I put inverted commas. Discrimination in terms of allocation. So because when you allocate based on size of population, so I think that's where Sabah, Sarawak and the smaller states will lose out, you know. So so in a sense, these are structural issues. There are also political economic issues. And of course, when I say political economy, especially now that the some of the, there are states, they are no longer with the government. So they are more, I mean, I'm talking about federal. So like Sarawak, they're under GPS. So naturally, or I can kind of expect that the kind of allocation that they will receive in terms of budget as compared to their time during the PN, I think they will definitely, I will see a kind of a reduction in certain areas. Yeah.
So just focusing on Sarawak in particular, what is it like in terms of development?
Oh, you're talking about development. This is basically, you need to look at it from, okay, I like to look at it from a regional perspective. Mm-hmm. People always think that Sarawak is all underdeveloped. Actually, it's not. Because what you see is that we need to divide Sarawak into, okay, if you were to use a regional perspective, we have the cities. Cities, we have Kuching, Cebu and Miri. So these are comparable to any state, any cities in Semenanjung Malaysia, except for maybe mega cities like Kuala Lumpur. So in that sense, so we have one is the city, then we have the urban area. Okay, mm-hmm. So city, Bandaraya, then we have the urban areas, just the normal city. Then the other one is rural areas. Okay, that's the rural area. And the last one is we have the interior. Now, if you talk about development, yes, there is development, but it is mostly concentrated in the big cities and in the urban areas. So the rural areas are still lagging or in need of infrastructure development or what we call basic infra, like, you know, 24 hours electricity supply. There are some areas that have yet to achieve that. And then in terms of treated water, clean water, so also in the rural areas, as compared to the urban and the cities, we see there's a vast in terms of the supply of that kind of. And schools, we still have, there is a kind of a dilemma here because there is a different definition for sekolah daif or dilapidated school. Mm. The state has a different definition. The federal under YB Mazli, they have a different definition. But whatever it is, we have one of, Sabah and Sarawak have one of the highest in terms of dilapidated schools. So, if you look at in general, Sarawak is one of the fastest moving state in terms of economic growth, and one of the richest in terms of its reserve. We have one very, very big reserve. But in terms of that is the positive side, and the state government is almost the same. The same state government has been ruling, so there's kind of stability and not like what we're experiencing here in Peninsula. The federal government, a big shift, and suddenly we find that everybody was like, oh my god, you know. So that's what I can say about Sarawak. So it's not really one size fits all. You say Sarawak is developed or Sarawak is underdeveloped. It depends where you are. All right.
So in that sense, right, is it even worth looking at it from a state level, or is it better when it comes to developing across the country, right, to look at it from a strata level? Because surely like some states have the rural areas, have urban areas that are more developed. Is it better to see in that way instead of like, you know, which states need more attention compared to others?
Of course, definitely. Now, if you look at the policies in Malaysia, it has always been, you know, allocations are based on states. So they give allocation. If you look at the budget, every year you'll see how much allocation has been given to this state, this state, and this state. So you are right in the sense that when you talk about in terms of developing, yes, we need to develop power, because if you look at the state and as compared to both Sabah and Sarawak, and of course there are some in like Kedah, Perlis, like you mentioned, you now rightly mentioned, Kelantan and Terengganu. These are states that need attention. Now, when we talk about policies, when you talk about development, the government needs to look at these two things normally. One is that the needs is needs based. Whether the states needs, you know, it's not whether they are politically on your side or not, or the opposition. That is number one, the needs based, right? But we have never really used that. So the other one is based on capabilities. So some states, they have the capabilities to generate their own economic growth. They have the investment coming in. And I think Sarawak is one of those. They are very, very aggressive in terms of investment. But the problem is that we have 60 years of almost near neglect in terms of a budget allocation. It was only, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dato' Sri Najib paid a lot of attention to Sarawak. So that's why the Sarawakians during the last election, they strongly voted for him. But I guess it's the nature of politics then. In the past, it has always been, we're kind of being sidelined in terms of our development. So, I mean, and I do hope that with the new government, with Tun Mahathir's shared prosperity, so I sincerely hope that the government will keep to their promise of, you know, sharing whatever prosperity that we have, you know, that so many Sarawak, Sabah and all the other states that are, would fall a bit backward in terms of growth and economic development, they will get more allocation, regardless whether they are, you know, they are the ruling party or they are of the opposition party. Yeah.
And to, I guess, just get into a bit of the nitty-gritty, how is funding and support usually requested? What is that process between the transfer of funds from the federal government to state governments?
Okay, I don't really know the details, but I do know that for budget purposes, it's a bottom-up kind of approach where they will go from, like, for example, each department right to the very, right to the very bottom. So it goes up, like how much you require and blah blah blah. And the last how many years, we noticed that there is a consultation whereby the minister of financial minister, in this case, last year, it was YB Lim Guan Eng, where they do consultations. They meet up with the people to listen, what is it that you want? So that's when they come across at the table, they will discuss, and that's where they start. I think, I'm not really sure how it goes up there, but normally that's where they decide, okay, how much is allocated for the state. So there are the state lease and also the federal lease. So then on another thing, there are federal projects and there are state projects. So federal projects will definitely be funded by the federal government, like health, education, and things like that. But state, you know, things like land issues, religion, and things like that are all state matters. So the federal may not be involved in it directly or indirectly in terms of budget allocation. But I don't really know the details because these are all at the administrative level. I only like kind of have ideas because I was involved in a few of the budget consultations. Yeah.
So I'm just touching on the idea of practice where, you know, there's this feeling that opposition states aren't being given as much attention by the federal government, right? Are there any kinds of governance framework that sort of, or guidelines that deters this practice from being conducted, like to prevent this kind of resource discrimination?
Well, first, I'm not really sure. I'm not a politician, but if we look at the kind of budget, I mean, just by our analysis, we find that there is a tendency for this one. I cannot say that it is done on purpose or whatever it is, but as a researcher, what I did was we look at the budget allocation for you know, all the states. That's when we notice that the trend is there. So whether it is by design or by whatever you call that, but basically, whenever you come from a state that is seen to be in opposition, the budget allocation is really kind of skewed or rather biased against them. But they are. But I'm not saying that they are being discriminated because in that sense, what is it? A lot of times, budgets or allocations are given to states that can, you know, like, this is the thing about economics. We have what we call, you know, the trickling down effect. You know, you put a lot of money, you pump your money into a place or an area or a state where you think that you will bring a lot of trickling down effects and it can generate, you know, growth. So rather than putting it in a state of thought where, I mean, from economic perspective, you know, you have to invest so much, like you said earlier on, imagine having a railway track from Kuching right up to Miri. And in terms of the demand for it and the economics of scale is just not there. So when economists come to think about it in terms of returns, then they say it's not worth investing in these states or in this kind of investment. It's better for you to pump your money into an area where you think there's already growth, there is already basic infrastructure. So there's a tendency for economists to overrule rather than political argument. So the economists have this very strong argument. So at the end of the day, states like Kelantan, Terengganu, where it has been initially already, even during the colonial times, they were in the East Coast, they were already being deprived in terms of development. So, you know, the chances of them being developed in terms of using economic argument is really very difficult to justify. But politically, probably if they are supporting the, they are the, what do you call the ruling party, probably the story would have been different because Kelantan has always been like in the opposition for quite some time. So it's very hard to argue on the basis of saying that, oh, Kelantan needed more or Sarawak needed more. So more often, the political argument will override, you know, economic argument.
So we have about just under 2 minutes. But last question, you know, what are some ways in which we've tried to reduce the gap among different states, and are we using the right strategies to do so?
Okay, I like to pick on the idea that Dr. Mahathir has been using. He talked about shared prosperity. Now, we will look at the strategies that have been outlined in shared prosperity, although it's in an old wine in new bottles of, if I can use wine now, about Sharia compliance. Mm-hmm. Okay, meaning to say, we need, basically, definitely, we need a lot of investment for all the states. Investment means trying to both foreign investment, and also domestic investment. But in order for them, for the investors to come, they will start looking at, you know, do you have the infra? So meaning to say, with shared prosperity, if you're talking about the outcome, because shared prosperity is about outcome, because at the end of the day, everybody will kind of have an equal share of the national wealth. So that goes for massive investment in states like Kelantan. Sarawak, not too bad because they have been doing that for quite some time. So states like Kelantan, Terengganu is not too bad, they have the oil and gas. You know, Perlis is one of the smaller states. So whether there is a political will to do that, that is something that we really hope that the new government will really pick it up, you know, that they should not discriminate, but rather really put in what the, in order to bring in growth. So we need, because in development, you have the push and pull. What is it that pulls people to the state? And the other one is it why people are not investing in the state? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the most important thing, shared prosperity as a principle, the strategy needs to be in place so that the way things are allocated and the way policies are being designed. And on the other hand, I also need, we should use a kind of a holistic approach in terms of development. So it's not just about economic growth. Right, you all have really dwelt very well into it, you know, because as a development economist, the most important thing, yes, you need economic growth, but beyond economic growth, we need to discuss in terms of inequality, rural, urban, the ethnicity, in terms of you know, a lot of other dimensions and sustainable development. So not just economic growth, because in the long term, this is something that will, you know, as a small country like Malaysia, if we don't focus on the future generation, on future economics, on sustainable issues, then I think we will lose out in the long run.
Dr. Madeline, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That was Dr. Madeline Burma, fellow at the Academy of Sciences Malaysia, talking about equal development among the states. If you have any thoughts, you can send that to us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We have the 6:30 news coming up. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.